Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan
with insurancebroker.ie
on News Talk.
If you were listening to yesterday afternoon's show, you'll know I spoke to Paula Crotty because her daughter, Jennifer, passed away 2 years ago after an eating disorder.
Well, Jennifer was diagnosed in January, and to be honest, prior to that, well, we didn't know that she had an eating disorder. We knew that she was struggling a little bit, but had no idea of what was going on. You know, she took the rest of the year out of college. She was in college at the time, and we naively thought that she'll be back in college in September. And it wasn't like that.
And as is often the case, you know, on this show, when we hear a story, something very similar to what Paul and her family went through with their daughter, their late daughter, Jennifer, more and more people get in touch and more families get in contact. And that's happened over the past 24 hours. Sent emails to lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. Jane is with me here on the line today because, Jane, I believe you're going through this too. Is that right, with your own daughter?
I am, yes, with my 16-year-old.
And what's the situation there, Jane?
Well, currently, she's turned into adult services since turning 16 this year. But just briefly, she was diagnosed in May of 2024. And so since then, we've had 8 admissions to Crumlin Hospital, 2 to Lindara Inpatient Unit, 2 to St John of God's, 1 to Talla Adult Services, and she's currently actually inpatient in another adult hospital as we speak, for medical stabilisation and NG feeding.
What, prior to her diagnosis, can you tell us a little bit about that, Jane? How was she? How were things at home? And, you know, when did you maybe first spot this, things weren't right?
I suppose, like, she was always a real happy-go-lucky kid, and that transition into secondary school really seemed to trigger off some behaviours, and we noticed from September 22 to July 2023 that she dropped a whole dress size and low moods, and she had started to refuse school in second year. And then I suppose we went to the GP looking for help, and it took 6 months and a jigsaw psychologist actually that she opened up to discover we were definitely dealing with an eating disorder.
And what can you tell us maybe a little bit about the signs and symptoms of that?
Well, like the low moods, like, you know, she was locking herself in her bedroom. I'd noticed she lunches were coming home from school, and she was having a small dinner, but it was literally like she was nearly having one meal and a few treats with her friends. But I could really see a lot of restricting going on.
You spotted it at home. You could see change in behaviour. Yeah,
you could see the change, and then I just could see her wasting away in front of me. Like, I just knew from her school uniform, I had to buy her a smaller size in second year than in first year, and that was what really triggered me knowing I needed to get help.
And when you would chat, you know, spoke to her about this, or would she talk about it at all, or?
No, absolutely no way. Like, you know, she wouldn't have accepted, and still to this day, you know, we're 2 years in, she still wouldn't accept that she has an eating disorder, or, you know, like, that's how mentally unwell they become. They just can't see it themselves.
Can't see it. And the process, one of the things I suppose we heard Paula talk about yesterday, you know, when she was talking about her late daughter, Jennifer, that actual process of going through, trying to get a diagnosis, you know, before we even start into the services that are there. How difficult was that for your daughter?
Like, we had gone through 6 months, and I suppose it came to a head. We had to take her to Crumlin after finding self-harm, and she was finally diagnosed in Crumlin while we were waiting on an appointment for the community and disorder services. We ended up in Crumlin, and that's where she was diagnosed with anorexia restrictive and social anxiety May 24.
And was she treated as an inpatient anywhere at that stage?
From May 24, she was inpatient in Crumlin, and she's literally spent a long time of her, since her diagnosis, she'd spent a long time in hospital, as I said. And we're still going through that cycle, I suppose. And that's something that we're trying to break at the moment. But I suppose now we've discovered a huge gap because she's turned 16. There's a really big gap for 16 to 18-year-olds that we've just discovered.
In what way? What's the gap?
So the gap that we're finding is like when she was in Crumlin, she would have been under a medical team and a dietitian and under psychiatry, and they would have all collaborated together, and we would have had a multidisciplinary team really. But now that we do have the outpatients, we're lucky enough that we live in Kildare, and we're in the catchment area for Lindara Community Eating Disorder Services, and we are an outpatient there. Unfortunately, when she becomes unwell and we need medical intervention, it's like that door is closed until she comes back to them. So we've just discovered as well that since she turned 16, there's no psychiatric help for 16 to 18 year olds. We've had to present in Tala, I suppose, for 3 trips because she was really mentally unwell and didn't want to live. And, you know, they told us we can only psychiatrically admit an 18-year-old. And we were sent home on those 3 occasions.
So up to last year, when she's under 16, she can be seen in Crumlin. And when she's over 18, she can be seen as an adult. But when you're 17, we struggle to find.
When you're 16, 17, medically, you are an adult and you can be in the adult services, but you have to be a medical admission. They cannot admit you psychiatrically, which she needed on that occasion. Currently, she is medically there, but there is no psychiatric. And for eating disorders, they need the both to coexist together in order, you know, to help with recovery.
And while she was an inpatient, you know, and at various different stages, Jane, did you notice positive change? Like, did that help?
It helped for the short term. There's been a lot of trauma, I suppose, from it, which we're now trying to deal with the trauma of it, because like she would have been under court order, and she would have been restraint fed, and like she has a lot, you know, of trauma around that and doesn't want to go back into that setting. But we don't really have any other options. Like we have tried private, we have private health insurance. Unfortunately, the private hospitals in Ireland, they cannot deal with any patients that require NG feeding. So unless they're eating, they cannot be in a private hospital.
Okay, now stay with me, Jane, if you can, for a few moments. And look, I know it's not easy for you to share your daughter's story with us today, so we do appreciate it. But if you don't mind, just hold on the line for a moment, because I think we've got Angela with us as well on the line. Angela, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Andrea.
You're going through something similar to Jane, is that right?
Something similar. We differ in the sense that our daughter is 14. She's been engaged with CAMHS for the past 4.5 years on mental health support. She suffers with depression and anxiety, suicidal ideation, self-harm. And last summer, I noticed a change in her behaviour around food, that she was restricting. I noticed she was losing a bit of weight, and I flagged it with her CAMHS team. Mm. And it's basically been ignored. She has an autism diagnosis as well. And unfortunately for autistic children in this country, they're lost between services, or everything is blamed on autism. So at the moment, we cannot get CAMHS to acknowledge that she has an eating disorder at all.
Why? Why is that?
Because, well, what I was told was maybe it's a little bit of ARFID, which is common, I suppose, in children with autism, where it will be described as peak eating. We're seeing a private dietitian who is, you know, she's confirmed that Anna very obviously has an eating disorder. Mm.
So your daughter falls under the banner, of a couple of different support services. And when your daughter was accessing some of the supports that were out there, how good or beneficial was that, Angela?
We haven't been able to access any supports because we have no diagnosis. We did manage to get a referral to the community eating disorder team. But again, they say that they suspect the issues are based on emotional dysregulation and the presence of autism. They've refused to assess her.
So where do you go?
We can't even. We have nowhere to go. Our backs are against the wall. We're sitting here watching our child fade away. We have begged, we have screamed at ministers, at the HSE, at CAMHS. We just sit here every day waiting for disaster to strike. Like, you know, she has been down to one meal a day for probably 8 months. Sometimes it's less.
It's very hard to watch that.
Keep her weight. Yeah.
Very hard to watch that,
you know, being underweight. So, you know, there's a denial, I suppose, in CAMHS and the HSE because she's not presenting as typical anorexia and losing weight rapidly, that there isn't a problem, so we're not believed. You know, like, so we're left at home. I'm monitoring her blood pressure. It's very low. I'm monitoring her blood sugar. She purges almost on a daily basis. She's suicidal. She doesn't want to live anymore. It's like Paula was saying yesterday, there's the nasty voice inside the head 24/7, and depending on how loud that voice is, the restriction gets worse. It's very much a self-harm, I suppose, presentation in our case. You know, that it's an attack on herself again, that she doesn't deserve to be alive and she doesn't deserve food.
This is what she's telling you, Angela, that she...
Yeah, she makes herself sick on a regular basis. So that's what we're dealing with.
That's what you're doing, yeah. And I don't want this to sound as harsh as it's going to sound, but so from what you're telling us today, Angela, if your daughter didn't have an autism diagnosis, right?
Yeah.
Are you saying that so there would be a streamline suite of services, or she would be seen? Is that the complication?
I'm not too sure. I'm actually not too sure that she would be, because it's so difficult to access community eating disorder team. Minimal beds. It's really, really difficult. You have to be, like, when I spoke to my GP initially about this, she said, literally, you have to be completely malnourished.
You have to be completely malnourished?
Yes, completely. You have to literally be at starvation mode to secure a referral to them. You know, and it's ridiculous. You know, everybody knows the earlier in something like this, the better the outcome. You know, and we can't get that. We can't even get an acknowledgement.
I don't know what to say to you, Angela. You know, God.
Yeah, it's crazy in this day and age. You know, no child should be left like this. Nobody should be left like this. You know.
Many years did you say this is going on?
Well, the very restrictive eating started last summer, 24. So we're coming on a year and a half, I suppose. Yeah. But we've been dealing with the mental health side, I suppose, for about 5 years. And engaged for 4.5. With, to be honest, very little improvement, especially in the last 2 years. It's just been deteriorating because of the move to secondary school, I suppose. You know, everything, her depression, her mood, her wanting to kill herself is all blamed on just the emotional dysregulation of autism, which I don't believe. I'm sorry. I think we're missing something.
And you've, as you mentioned, you've been in touch, you know, Angela, with the HSE I know that the HSE have got on, literally now as I'm speaking to you, I've just been handed a statement here. So let me just bring you some of this, okay? And maybe Jane, this is for yourself as well. Most people can and do recover from eating disorders if they receive effective evidence-based treatment from ED-trained staff, while a small number of people benefit from more intense treatments through the day programmes or inpatient care. The most effective treatment setting is in the community. There are currently 11 eating disorder teams consisting of more than 100 clinicians operating across the entire HSC, with plans to recruit three additional teams this year. One adult ED team also provides care to its catchment area with three specialist eating disorder beds in St Vincent's University Hospital. In July, a review of adult bed capacity for specialist ED beds was completed. The review made several recommendations for plans regarding the number and locations of adult eating disorder beds. A proposal was provided to Minister Butler in July, currently under review by the Department of Health. There are four CAMHS inpatient units across the country, and as part of the National Children's Hospital Development, a new 20-bed CAMHS inpatient approved centre will provide for additional capacity nationally. Now, it's a two-page statement, which I'm very happy to send to both yourself, Angela, and to Jane. Does that inspire much hope, Jane?
I know all of what the HSE are saying there, but there's just no alignment in any of the services. And I suppose that's where our daughter is kind of just getting stuck in the middle of it all. Like, we've a super psychiatrist in Lindara, but it's taken like our daughter like a year and a half to really trust her. And I suppose if we had our psychiatrist from Lindara in line with the medical staff in the hospital she's currently in, you know, and in the past, if we had this, we may have a better outcome. Mm. But at the moment, you know, there's nothing aligned. Like, we're constantly having to repeat our story to a new doctor. And like, there's doctors and nurses, they're not specially trained in eating disorders. And they can say some really harmful comments, you know, that is feeding the eating disorder even further.
Just, would you both stay with me for a moment? I think I have Aveen Bannon with me on the line as well. Aveen, you're a dietitian with the Dublin Nutrition Centre, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
How are you doing? Good. Have you, like, in terms of just listening to Jane and Angela's stories there today, is there any advice? I suppose it's probably the
it's so difficult because, I mean, definitely eating disorders are on, I'm a mental health dietitian, and definitely eating disorders are, I know, on the increase. Like, they estimate that 1 in 20 people in Ireland will experience an eating disorder in their lifetime, and that was kind of research from 2023. So it's become so much more common, and it's so nuanced in terms of different types of eating disorders. You know, the disordered eating disorders when it becomes a compulsion, so a compulsive behaviour with control, be it with anorexia or bulimia, or like, you know, like an orthorexia, kind of fixation on healthy eating. And it needs a team approach. I mean, obviously early intervention is always best, and it's trying to help somebody get that all support that they can get, where there's a team of like therapy, dietetics, GP and psychiatrist, like, all working together. And I think that's an important point even that Jane makes, is the continuity, is having that team approach, which is probably the most effective. There's so many factors now where, you know, even people talk about social media, and like, yeah, it can definitely add pressure and fuel comparison and fuel body dissatisfaction. But it's like, eating disorders are so, so complex. They're biological, they're psychological, the social factors at play. And where, you know, kids nowadays, I suppose, they're dealing with something very different to what they may have had to dealt with in the past. And it's trying to help support them with that. You know, the more support people can get in the community before it gets to admission phase, early onset, the better. Because, you know, then there obviously is very distressing situations, like, you know, restrained feeding or requiring NG feeding and things like that.
Yeah. And when you heard Angela talk about, you know, her daughter and who also has an autism diagnosis as well, and I suppose that the nuance may be around that. But like, as Angela said, she's shouting and roaring at every service out there and basically hitting her head against a brick wall. Like, where does she go?
It's very, very difficult because you're trying to get, you know, you're looking at somebody who has she's like depression, anxiety, self-harm, suicidal ideation. Like, the poor thing is obviously really going through a tough time. And then the food is another aspect of control, really. It's the restriction of food and almost feeling like you know it's not worthwhile. So it is trying to get that support in terms of balancing the mental health side of things, and then trying to help encourage feeding where possible, with be it a team or from home or different situations, to try and help get as much nourishment as possible. Mm-hmm. And it is practical tips. Like, it's not, you know, you're not asking someone to hand them a meal plan. It's trying to figure out, how can we get any nutrition in any format to try and help get food in.
Look, I know it's an extremely hard, you know, extremely difficult thing for people to talk about and to share stories with us here. And I see more and more texts, actually, Jane and Angela coming in and probably similar, you know, similar stories, I'd say, too, to yourself. Like people talking about a 15-year-old in Cork and another lady here with a 14-year-old daughter at home diagnosed with anorexia 18 months ago talking about support services. If you could say one thing, Angela, to the health minister, It's I don't know if it was, does it fall under health minister? It'd be Mary Butler's mentioned there, I think, in this HSE statement. But anyway, look, what would you say to the government about this?
I would say that I don't believe they know exactly what's going on the ground. They don't know the lived reality of families with children with mental health issues or eating disorders. I think all they see is that the operating procedures are being followed and the boxes are being ticked, but the actual nitty gritty on the ground, what's happening, I don't think that's been seen at all.
Yeah. Well, look,
they're not listening.
Not listening.
It's often I will hear people, and even in my own profession, say, oh, we don't work with people with eating disorders, and I will say to them, you absolutely do, because it's so prevalent out there. Any dietitian working in any practice will probably be coming across somebody with an eating disorder, and it's something within our own course as when you study dietetics. I mean, I'm a long time out of college, but it wasn't something that was necessarily covered to such a degree in college. So it's probably further education, even coming from, you know, people who work in areas of whether it's dietetics, you know, medicine, GPs, different things, to understand the science and the language to use with kids and any families.
Spot it better. Aveen Bannon, dietitian at Dublin Nutrition Centre. Angela and Jane, listen, thanks a million to you both for sharing your own personal story with us here today at Lunchtime Live. If we get any further response back, we'll certainly be in touch with you both. And the email, if anyone else would like to contact us, is lunchtimelive@newstalk.com.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.